From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of September 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll hear about the weather forecast for the United States and South America with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. From Illinois Public Media, it is Public Radio for the farming world. A quick reminder as we get started on this Friday afternoon that each Thursday for six Thursdays in a row, and this started yesterday, I'll be emceeing, hosting there to moderate the Farm Doc Fall webinar series. Next Thursday at 11 a.m., we'll talk about the price of farmland. Bruce Sherrick and Gary Schnitke will be along on that one with Luke Worrell. You'll want to make sure that you're around for it. Get yourself scheduled for it. These are pretty simple and easy to do. It's a webinar that you frankly can listen to and glance down and see what's on the page. You don't have to watch it all the time. So you can be doing something else in the cab while these are happening, but I think you'll want to listen. It's really important. That's the Farm Doc Fall webinar series. You can find those in our schedule on the willag.org website, or more importantly, register for free at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look under the webinars tab.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Corn futures in Chicago finished the December at 677 and a quarter, down a quarter of a cent. The March at 683, a quarter higher. And May futures up three quarters at 683 and a half. November beans down 3 cents today, $14.48 and a half. The settlement price January at 1455 and a quarter, down 2 3/4. And the March contract, $14.56, 2 1/4 cents lower. The bean meal at $429.60, down $4.90, and the bean oil $68.66, $1.87 higher. Wheat futures for the day at $8.59 3/4, up 14 3/4. In the December for the soft red, the hard red up 9 cents at $9.35 1/4. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the lead option down 35 cents at $150.97 1/2. The feeders at $181.25, 32 1/2 cents higher for the day, and lean hogs at $87.97 1/2, up 32 1/2 cents for the afternoon. Crude oil on the day finished at $85.03, actually trading there, down just about 7 cents. And gasoline, just about even at $2.37 6/10. Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com, out of Atchison, Kansas. He is here to discuss what's happened in Chicago today and all week long. Hi, Mike. Thanks so much. Can we go back to the beginning of the week with the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, the Crop Production Report? Kind of get your take as we came out of that at 11 o'clock on Monday and made our way through the rest of the week. What happened?
Yeah, good question, Todd, because I think it's really useful for the next several months to keep this in mind, and that is we are still have a supply-led bull thriving thanks to the USDA. Maybe didn't look like it on the price action this week, but that's because there's a couple demand bears out there that are keeping the investment flows off the table in the grain complex especially, but also keeping the overall flows out of the equities and out of the commodities. But I think USDA's numbers are essentially spot on at this point. I think that the soybean yield, it's going to be difficult to take it lower, much lower than it is now. Corn yield, I think it could go a little bit lower because of the way we're finishing out this crop year at this stage of the game. So I really feel like this year, if I go back to the last 8 or 10 years, I feel like USDA's estimates are really in real time this year compared to some of the years past. And I know that we're getting close to that time period where we're going to start looking at the physical ear and looking at the counts and looking at the test weights and the pod counts. And so that's going to add some volatility to the market and some uncertainty to the market. But I think generally speaking, we started the pandemic with a supply chain issue. We continued with European weather problems, U.S. weather problems, South American weather problems, other supply weather related problems that are keeping the supply mindset very, very nervous. And I think that's where we're trying to get the demand off our backs. That's kind of the, you know, like I said, the two bulls, the two bears out there beating up on the supply bull right now is the demand side of the equation.
Yeah, so what are those two things?
Well, we had one this week, and I think between that and the rail stop, and that is the CPI numbers, the inflation numbers here in the United States, were for the core CPI especially, were red hot, and it really does make people think in this line of work that we're going to go for a full percentage increase next week on the Federal Reserve's update, and that is the second potential demand bear, is that the Federal Reserve comes in and says, look, we're going to go 0.75% this year, this month, and we're going to do another 0.75% next month, or they do a full percentage point. What we continue to see is the deflationary mindset in the trade build with the stronger dollar and the weakening emerging market currencies. Chinese offshore currency, for example, down to mid-2020 levels at this point against the U.S. dollar. So if people call and ask, why is this not, you know, being representative of the USDA supply-demand report in the price action, not only is it harvest, not only was the fear of the rail strike, but also, most importantly, it's the policy by the central banks around the world and how they could really hurt the emerging markets.
So I think what you're telling me is that you feel like we're still in a supply-led market that's bullish. However, the interest rates that the Federal Reserve has been trying to use to slow down the economy is having a dampening effect on the marketplace.
Yeah, the bottom line here for me is, Todd, we're in a cost-push inflation environment. We have been since the pandemic, and the Federal Reserve, in my opinion, I'm no economist. I don't know nearly as much as those people, but history would suggest, in my opinion, they are using the wrong tool, a very blunt object that is not going to get the job done. It's going to create a recessionary problem. And that recessionary problem, I think, is going to keep fund money out of the markets. And so I'm not participating in this idea of fund money running from the equities to the commodities because of inflation. It's the wrong type of inflation because it's not demand inflation. The rail strike, once again, proved that. If we would have had that, we would have lost even more demand from other competitors if that would have gone into play. And the market showed us that with the knowledge that it was right around the corner. So it's just the wrong time to be raising rates sharply, because all it does is hurt the emerging markets, and that hurts both the commodity investment demand and actual commodity demand, while keeping prices high to keep the commodity producers red hot and trying to expand their business.
What should farmers do in terms of reactions to this?
Yeah, 21 bushels really, I think, need to be cleaned up if we don't get a reaction by the Federal Reserve. We look like Q4 is going to be as tough to go through as this past couple months. I think you really want to get cleaned up on 21. The basis is already kind of flagging that. 22 beans, I think, off the combine sales are a wise decision if we can get, you know, one more big spook to the upside and move to the upside and fear comes into the market maybe one more time. Make room for corn, essentially, is what my goal is. And then lastly, if we keep not raining in the southern plains as we try to put in hard red wheat, I would say be ready to get hedges in place for 23 hard red wheat and soft red wheat, but just keep your eye on it for now and see what the weatherman says.
Have you talked to producers in the eastern Corn Belt? Are they wanting to put more wheat in this fall because of high prices potentially?
I'm hearing just the opposite, and this is one of the things that we talked about on Commodity Week but didn't get to, and I'm so glad you brought it up, because I heard in the eastern Corn Belt, between DP charges and bad basis and some issues with the physical grain contracts, it just was not as rich a price as the producers were expecting when they got to harvest.
Oh, so they probably will be once bitten and not coming back to that in that case, I suppose. What else are you watching as we wrap up our time together here?
I think the big thing we'll be watching here is whether we get a change in the grain deal from Ukraine, because that's one thing that the wheat was able to show us again. It does. Ukraine still matters along with the weather, and the wheat did have a higher close in both soft red and hard red, and that isn't bad after a week like we had this week.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You too, Todd. Thanks so much.
That's Mike Zuzulow. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. The This fall, the FarmDoc team is hosting a series of 6 webinars. We kicked it off yesterday, and you can find that up on the YouTube video site that belongs to FarmDoc at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. And you can also find a way to register for those 6 webinars, at least the 5 remaining ones. They're on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Central Time. Next week, we'll talk about the price of farmland. You can see the whole series at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You and get yourself registered. And then if you visit our website at willag.org, you'll also find them on Thursdays in the schedule. They're highlighted in red. And if you keep scrolling forward, you'll see a couple of things. Usually the USDA's monthly crop production and WASD reports are in red. You'll see the Farm Assets Conference that's coming up on the 21st day of November at the iHotel here in Champaign. More information on that is being developed right now. It's going to be a great day. That's the Monday before Thanksgiving, and you want to set that aside to come here to be with us at the FarmDoc team at the iHotel. And then in January, we'll be on the road with the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. I believe it's the 11th, the 12th, and the 13th. I think those are the right dates. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in Mount Vernon, Peoria, and DeKalb, and followed up with a series of 6 more webinars taking up the same topics but one at a time on Thursday mornings through February and parts of January. And then in March, on the 7th day, that's the Tuesday in March, for the all-day Ag Outlook at the Beef House. We've got a big schedule already put in place. You can find it in our website at willag.org. Look for the schedule and then scroll through. You'll find them highlighted in red. Let's check the weather forecast now with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible Nutrient Ag Solutions. Hi, Eric. Thank you for being with us. Let's get right into this. Out west, the weather has been changing. I suspect that'll have an impact on us, but can we start there in California?
Yeah, and that's probably the most important place to start, because the temperatures going into the West United States over this weekend are going to be maybe 40 to 50 degrees colder than it was when they were all that heat wave not 10 days ago. So Sacramento was 116 with that big heat wave that we just finished there. We're expecting high temperatures over the weekend to struggle to get out of the 60s. And what's going on is there's a deep trough that's going to sit off the West Coast. It's going to deliver rainfall, believe it or not, to the northern half of California. That's good. Their big reservoirs are currently sitting around 30% full pool. So to bring that moisture in early is a good thing. But you know what's going on. If there's cold weather there, it's not here. So our temperatures start to rebound as we go through this weekend. We're going to be seeing, you know, summer-like temperatures around here. And it's farther to our west, where in Kansas and Nebraska, they may have high temperatures Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, that are going to be there in the, I mean, upper 90s, lower 100s. And over that whole time period, it's big ridge is going to sit from Texas all the way to New England. And what happens is underneath that ridge, it gets hotter and it gets drier. We sit right on the north, which means we're going to have to watch out for some storms possibly over the weekend. But certainly temperatures are going to go up. Now, the wetter places are going to run the periphery of that ridge. So along the U.S.-Canada border, and they don't want that rain. I was in Fargo last week. They'd like to just have warm weather, stretching things out, finishing up the growth season, and instead they've gotten some chances of getting some cooler conditions coming in once we get about a week from today. It'll be interesting next time we talk if we're mentioning the word frost in the forecast for the northern plains and upper Midwest. They still need another couple of weeks to get everything finished up. They need a late frost this year. So to see one kind of hinting at coming in at that time could be problematic.
What's the 10-day harvest outlook?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking pretty good. If we miss the rain, it's a good long stretch of drier weather. So let's let that dry down in the field. From there, let's, you know, bring in, you know, keep the warmer conditions around. That's not a bad thing. And even though I was calling for some colder weather that could come behind this front next Thursday, Friday, Saturday timeframe, it doesn't look like it's going to be bringing frost here. You know, our normal frost date's a month from today, you know, the 15th, 16th, 17th of October. But we could get some cooler nights following. But CPC released their new forecast, and it even stretches out there for the month of October, which overall looks pretty favorable.
Should we discuss anything in the tropics at this time?
Yeah, we do have a system to be keeping an eye on. Its name's Fiona, and it's going over the Lesser Antilles toward Puerto Rico this weekend, and maybe over the island Hispaniola early next week. And so what we'll have to do is start watching it by the time we get to next Tuesday, Wednesday. Most of the models want to keep it out in the Atlantic. But should the timing of that front next Thursday, Friday not kick Fiona out and it sneaks south of it and goes maybe between Florida and Cuba, the strait that's down there, then that may get it into the Gulf. And so I'm just going to say that that's still a possibility. It's a small one, but then we just worry about anything in the Gulf this time of year coming up the Mississippi River Basin and possibly giving us rain. Now, no models predicting that right now. Just something that I'll keep a close eye on, because here we are in the second half of the hurricane season. We've only had six named systems. And so this is certainly one that we just got to keep watching.
We'll finish out by transitioning to South America to close out the program. However, I warn you, and you know this, that in the future, we'll start with South America.
Yeah, it's going to be front of mind. And what they're waiting on is about 2 inches of rain. Right. And so they were able to start planting on the 15th across most places in Brazil, especially in Mato Grosso. And the forecast says, hey, by the time we start October, there should be decent rains coming through. Where the problems are going to be is down in southern Brazil, where we continue to see dry conditions like in Rio Grande do Sul, and then into Argentina, which has had a pretty cold but also dry spring so far. So if there's delays, it's going to be south. It looks as though the northern growing areas, including that big state of Mato Grosso, are going to get going quite quickly. Again, all of this is really tied closely to La Nina, which we expect to strengthen over the next 6 weeks. And I'm still, I kind of got my fingers crossed looking at some of the long range forecast that La Nina could start to fade midwinter. I'd like to kind of break out of this pattern and talk about something new in the spring, which would include another branch of the jet stream we haven't seen in 3 years. So we will have a lot to talk about, but you're right. South America is going to be front of mind here for a while for us.
Is there any historical context for 3 years of La Nina in the Southern Hemisphere?
Yeah, there is. We've had that happen twice since 1950. The most recent was 98, 99, and 2000. But that was different than this go around. And what I mean by that is 98 was strong, 99 was weaker, and then the La Nina 2000 was very weak. What we're doing right now as we start this third year is this is the strongest it's been. So instead of weakening with time, this one got stronger. But we still think that a likely end to it, January, February could still be very much in the works. That's at least the latest evidence I got.
How much of a problem does that give to the crops in Argentina and southern Brazil then?
Yeah, it's a problem early. So what happens is that the jet stream that's there, which also comes out of the west, tends to be pushed farther toward Antarctica. So they have fewer systems that roll through, not a good return of moisture. So if there's a La Nina to start a growing season, it tends to be wet in Argentina and southern Brazil, dry in Argentina and southern Brazil, wet in northern Brazil. If you had an El Nino, you'd flip that over. We'd be talking about better conditions in Argentina and dry conditions farther to the north. So what the concern is if we go into the season with La Nina, it fades in the middle of the season, does that flip-flop this whole precipitation pattern, which would mean first crop of beans would finish on dry conditions and the safrinha crop would go in under drier conditions. So that's the thing I'm worried about for South America.
Thank you much. And we'll keep track of all of that. Well, you will, and I'll ask you about it as we go through the coming months. I appreciate it.
You bet.
That was Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find it online at willag.org. Listen to it anytime you'd like on demand. Just click and play from the website willag.org or hit the podcast page and you'll find links to subscribe to the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. It's all there at willag.org.